Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for the Health Report and Explorations, coming up after As It Is.
Hello and welcome back. I'm Jim Tedder in Washington with As It Is, a program that tells you about interesting things happening in our world. At the same time, it offers you a chance to learn and improve your American English. Today, we have two stories for you. First, we hear from Thailand, where health officials are concerned about the rising number of HIV cases in young people. Why is this happening? What can be done about it? Then, it's time to batter up. One person who played in baseball's Little League championships this year was special. If you would like to find out why, stay right where you are and listen to As It Is. Here is part one. An increasing number of young people in Thailand are becoming infected with HIV, the virus that causes AIDS. The United Nations Children's Fund released a report about HIV on August 25th. The report said people in Thailand between the ages of 15 and 24 have about 70% of the HIV infections caused by sex. Researchers gathered information from almost 2,000 young people in Thailand who are members of the groups that have a higher risk of becoming infected with HIV. Researchers said infection rates are rising in young people who sell sex for money and who use needles to put drugs into their bodies. Young men who have unprotected sex with other men are also increasingly infected with HIV. Researchers said they wanted to tell these groups to be more careful about having sex. However, they say it is becoming more difficult to communicate with young people. Robert Gass is the HIV/AIDS chief in Thailand for UNICEF. He said 10 or 15 years ago, health workers could easily talk to young people about having safe sex. Health workers could enter a bar where homosexuals go and talk to them about the importance of using condoms. But now, he says, many people can just use the internet to find sexual partners. He says they are able to find these partners using apps on their smartphones. Health workers say women who work in Thailand's prostitution centers are better protected from HIV. Women in these centers understand how to avoid the virus, and they take steps to keep from getting infected. However, the UNICEF study found that female sex workers in Thailand, who are not Thai, often cannot use the country's free health services. They also may not get important information about how to prevent HIV. And another group of young women is at higher risk of getting the virus, those who have sex for money but do not work all the time as sex workers. Mr. Gass says this group includes university students and young girls. He says they meet the people they will have sex with on the street or at bars. He says they really don't have the life skills and negotiating ability to ensure that the partners that they spend time with are using condoms. Researchers estimate about 500,000 people in Thailand are living with HIV. At one time, AIDS was the top killer in the country. Now, the disease is number five. It is responsible for 4% of all deaths in Thailand. You are listening to The Voice of America, and we are coming to you from Washington. To many people, it may have looked like just another child's baseball game in the United States. But the Little League World Series that ended last weekend was more than that. It was the largest competition for the best, the most dedicated, and the most disciplined of the world's young baseball players. This year, one player received special attention for throwing the ball very fast. But the player got even more attention because, in a game mainly played by boys, she is a girl. Ana Mateo, you're up.
Monet Davis is currently one of the most talked-about athletes in the U.S. She has been on the front page of her hometown paper, the Philadelphia Inquirer. TV ratings of her games are the highest ever on the sports network ESPN for Little League Baseball. And she will be the first Little League player ever to appear on the cover of Sports Illustrated magazine in late August. But why all the attention? Monet Davis is not the first girl to play Little League Baseball. Katherine Johnston Mazur was. Back in 1950, Katherine Johnston Mazur cut her hair, called herself Tubby, and joined a Little League Baseball team in the city of Corning, New York. When it was discovered that she was a girl, the league created a rule banning girls from playing. The Tubby Rule, as it was known, would stand for 24 years. Baseball is mainly a boys' sport, but Monet Davis is outstanding at it. She plays on the U.S. Mid-Atlantic regional team called the Tanny Dragons. They are a group of kids from the city of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. The city is known for its working-class culture and for its love of sports. Philadelphia is where the legend of the boxer Rocky was born. The Tanny Dragons made it to the World Series after Monet Davis pitched a shutout game against a team from Newark, New Jersey, in a regional championship game. In baseball, a shutout is a game in which the pitcher does not let the other team score. Without scoring, you cannot win a baseball game. And that is how her team made it to the World Series. No one could hit Monet's pitches. It is reported that she can throw the ball over 100 kilometers an hour. She is the first girl to have pitched a shutout in the Little League World Series tournament. Dawn Staley is also a Philadelphia native and a basketball player who has won 3 gold medals in the Olympics. Ms. Staley says Monet represents an important sports message. "It's just a baseball," Ms. Stanley says. "We need to really look at it like that. It's just a baseball. Anyone who picks up a ball is just playing." Ms. Staley says that the Little League World Series gave Monet a huge opportunity to show her baseball abilities. She reminds us that there are many girls playing just as well, but who have not had this much attention. She calls them diamonds in the rough, or unpolished diamonds. Monet Davis is not just a good player. She is a good teammate. She is quick to point out that it takes a team to win a baseball game. One reporter from the Inquirer asked Davis, "What would you like the public to know about your teammates?" Monet smiled and said, "These guys should be interviewed more. It's not just about me. It's about the whole team. And without them, we wouldn't be here right now." I'm Ana Mateo.
And there you have it. Health news you can use and something from the world of sports. Thank you for being with us today. I'm Jim Tedder in Washington. Learning English is a part of the Voice of America.
The Health Report is next, followed by Explorations. You can read and listen to our programs and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Health Report. Chocolate. Is it good for our health? Or is it just good? Many experts warn that the sugar in chocolate is not good for us. But doctors point to the healthful qualities of chocolate's antioxidants. VOA's George Pudich reports that uncooked organic chocolate may contain the right balance. The biggest value in eating cocoa and dark chocolate, besides the taste, may be its ability to lower blood pressure. This comes from the rich, comforting, almost decadent feeling of cocoa butter melting in your mouth. That happy feeling may also add to chocolate's antidepressant qualities, says Kim Hoffman. Ms. Hoffman is a dietitian, a person who advises people about what to eat to be healthy. She tells how dark chocolate makes us feel better and raises our mood.
It contains phenethylamines, which is a neurotransmitter that's found in the brain and actually acts as a mood elevator. It also enhances the blood endorphins, which are the happy opiates, and they are basically around when you're on a high.
Not all chocolate is equal when it comes to those helpful chemicals. The way commercial chocolate makers produce chocolate affects its health benefits. First, there is the issue of temperature. The heat required to process commercial chocolate can be as high as 130 degrees centigrade. Some researchers say temperatures that high can actually lower the effectiveness of those beneficial chemicals. Anthony Grid makes fine chocolates at a store called Honest Chocolate in Cape Town, South Africa. Mr. Grid says there is a movement in the food world to limit heat when cooking food. Followers of this movement say that high temperatures lower the health benefits of our food. Another way chocolate makers decrease its health benefits is by adding sugar. The taste of cocoa is naturally sharp or bitter. This bitterness comes from an antioxidant in cocoa, a chemical called polyphenol. To reduce cocoa's bitter taste, makers of chocolate products remove the polyphenol and add sugar. Food science writer Leonie Jobert notes that sugar is connected to weight-related illnesses. Ms. Jobert warns that eating too much sugar leads to many health problems. The chocolates at Honest Chocolate are made with agave nectar, not cane sugar, and they have a very high percentage of cacao. This is something buyer Jessica Bonin enjoys.
What I find quite remarkable about their chocolate is that you're not overwhelmed by the sugar, so you actually get to taste the chocolate itself, which is really so luxurious and quite decadent.
And from VOA Learning English, that's the Health Report. I'm Anna Mateo.
I I'm Shirley Griffith.
And I'm Steve Ember with Explorations in VOA Special English. Today we tell about the flights that followed Apollo 11 to the moon.
The summer of 1969 was a special time in history. That was when men from Earth, American astronauts, flew their Apollo 11 spacecraft to the moon, landed, and returned home safely. The world honored the astronauts as heroes. Neil Armstrong and Edwin Aldrin were the first to land on the moon, but they were not the last. NASA, the National Aeronautics and Space Administration, launched six more Apollo flights. Apollo 12 lifted off only 4 months after the Apollo 11 flight. Rain had fallen the night before. The clouds cleared, but more rain was expected. Space officials decided the weather was safe enough for them to launch the spacecraft. 36 seconds after liftoff, lightning hit the huge Saturn V rocket. The Apollo spacecraft lost electrical power to its control system. The astronauts worked calmly to get the power back on. Then lightning struck again, and power was lost again. The lightning, however, did not affect the Saturn rocket. The rocket continued to push the spacecraft on its path. The astronauts soon fixed the electrical problem. The situation returned to normal. Apollo 12 could continue its flight to the moon.
All three astronauts of Apollo 12 were Navy flyers. Charles Conrad was the flight commander. Richard Gordon was pilot of the command module. Alan Bean was pilot of the moon lander. After 4 days, Apollo 12 was near its landing area on the moon. It would land in an area called the Ocean of Storms. The Ocean of Storms was about 2,000 kilometers west of the place where Apollo 11 had landed. Richard Gordon remained in the command module circling the moon. Charles Conrad and Alan Bean flew the lander craft to the surface. They came down near Surveyor 3, an unmanned spacecraft that had landed on the moon 2 years before. Surveyor had sent back 6,000 pictures of the moon before it stopped working. Conrad stepped out of the lander onto the moon. He described the surface as he walked away from the spacecraft. "Oh," he said, "is this soft? I don't sink in it too far."
Alan Bean followed Charles Conrad to the surface. The two astronauts collected about 35 kilograms of rocks. They left 5 scientific instruments designed to send information back to Earth. And they visited the old Surveyor spacecraft. The two astronauts spent more than 31 hours on the moon. Then they returned to the orbiting command module and started back to Earth. They landed in the Pacific Ocean, only 6 kilometers from the ship that waited to rescue them.
The next flight in America's Apollo space project, Apollo 13, never landed on the moon. 3 days after launch, an explosion damaged the spacecraft.
The astronauts lost most of their oxygen. They had to cancel the moon landing and use the moon lander as a lifeboat. Oxygen from the lander kept them alive during the long trip back to Earth. Apollo 14 was launched in January 1971. It landed in the hilly Fra Mauro area of the moon. Fra Mauro is a huge highlands east of Apollo 12's landing place. A large meteorite hit the area 4 billion years ago. The force of the crash spread material from deep inside the moon. Scientists wanted to study this material. They believed it would give them important information about the early history of the moon.
The commander of the Apollo 14 flight was Alan Shepard. He had been the first American in space. Stuart Roosa and Edgar Mitchell were the other members of the crew. One piece of equipment on Apollo 14 was a lightweight vehicle with two wheels. The astronauts used it to carry tools and cameras while they were on the moon. The vehicle made it possible for them to travel farther from the spacecraft to collect rocks and do experiments. They walked as far as 3 kilometers from the moon lander. Even with the two-wheeled vehicle, however, Shepard and Mitchell could not reach one of their goals, a crater called Cone. They did not have enough oxygen to walk that far. They had to return to the lander. Apollo 12 and Apollo 14 produced much new scientific information, and they increased the interest of scientists in the next Apollo flights to the moon.
The last three flights would permit astronauts to stay much longer on the moon. They also would provide a vehicle with four wheels in which astronauts could ride. With such a vehicle, astronauts could explore a much larger area of the moon's surface. The vehicle was called a lunar rover. The lunar rover was powered by electricity. It could carry two astronauts more than 30 kilometers from the lander. It could carry more than 110 kilograms of equipment. The lunar rover also had a television camera and an antenna for sending color television broadcasts back to Earth.
David Scott, Alfred Worden, and James Irwin were the crew for Apollo 15. They were launched in July 1971. They landed at Hadley Rill, near the Apennine Mountains, northwest of the place where Apollo 11 had landed. Scott and Irwin were the first to use the lunar rover vehicle. They made several trips from the landing area to study the surface of the moon. They gathered 76 kilos of moon rocks, and they placed a small satellite in lunar orbit before they returned to Earth. The Apollo 15 astronauts returned safely. Scientists were excited about the moon rocks the astronauts brought back. They named one of them the Genesis Rock. It is believed to be more than 4 billion years old. Scientists say the rock was created very early in the life of the moon. Soil brought back contained bits of orange glass. Scientists said The glass came from material created as deep as 300 kilometers below the moon's surface. Astronauts John Young, Thomas Mattingly, and Charles Duke flew Apollo 16 to the moon in April 1972. Young and Duke landed southwest of the Apollo 11 landing place. They spent 45 hours on the moon. They collected rocks and set up scientific equipment.
Astronauts Eugene Cernan, Harrison Schmitt, and Ronald Evans made the last Apollo flight to the moon. That was in December 1972. Cernan and Schmitt landed in a valley almost directly north of the Apollo 11 landing place. They spent 75 hours in all on the surface. More than 22 hours were spent working outside the lander. The astronauts made three trips in the lunar rover to take pictures and collect rocks. The astronauts also left many scientific devices that would continue to report information about the moon. Cernan and Schmitt lifted off the moon on December 14th. Just before leaving, they placed a metal sign on the surface. The sign was to remain forever. It said, "Here man completed his first exploration of the moon, December 1972. May the spirit of peace in which we came be reflected in the lives of all mankind."
Production of the Saturn V rocket and the Apollo spacecraft ended with Apollo 17. America's manned explorations of the moon were completed. It was the end of a special time in human history. It had been the first time people moved beyond their small planet into the huge solar system. Now, once again, the moon was beyond human reach.
This program was written by Marilyn Rice Cristiano. It was produced by Mario Ritter. I'm Steve Ember.
And I'm Shirley Griffith. You can find the complete series on the American Space Program on our website, voaspecialenglish.com. Join us next week for Explorations in VOA Special English.